Hi there, welcome to Stroke Busters. I'm Amy Quinn, your host, bringing you groundbreaking research and expert insights from the Institute for Stroke and Cerebrovascular Diseases at UT Health Houston. Our team is committed to unraveling the mysteries surrounding strokes, those unexpected interruptions to the blood flow in the brain that can have life-altering consequences. Our team of experts, or as we like to call them, Stroke Busters, is dedicated to pushing the boundaries of stroke research, clinical care, and public awareness. Each episode of the Stroke Busters podcast will feature engaging conversations with leading physicians, researchers, and survivors, providing valuable insights into the latest advancements in stroke science, innovative treatments, and inspiring stories of triumph over adversity. Today, we were honored to chat with our special guest, a true luminary in the world of neurology and health disparities research, Dr. Lewis Morgenstern, a professor of neurology, epidemiology, emergency medicine, and neurosurgery at the University of Michigan Medical School and School of Public Health. Dr. Morgenstern has been on the forefront of groundbreaking research, serving as the principal investigator of the NIH-funded Brain Attack Surveillance in Corpus Christi, or BASIC, project since 1999. With over 130 original, peer-reviewed manuscripts under his belt, his expertise spans health services clinical trials, stroke epidemiology, and clinical studies of intracerebral hemorrhage. We were able to sit down with Dr. Morgenstern and ask a few more questions following his grand rounds presentation for medical students and faculty at McGovern Medical School here in Houston, Texas, with our host, Dr. Carlos De La Garza. So let's get to it. Enjoy, and be sure to follow us so you don't miss out on future episodes.
Good afternoon, Dr. Morgenstern. This is Carlos. I'm one of the stroke fellows over at UT. Thank you so much for joining us for our podcast.
My pleasure.
So we've just come off your grand rounds, which is great, by the way. And during your presentation, you did mention, or well, you showed us that Texas is still pretty much on your mind with all your memorabilia you have. But I wanted to know why Corpus Christi, why did that spur your interest, or where did it come from?
So when I was a fellow, like you, at UT Houston, I was really interested in working on a health equity, health disparities project. And there were a group of very famous cardiovascular epidemiologists at the UT Houston School of Public Health, Milt Nickerman, David Goff, Darwin Labarth, who had a project in Corpus Christi called the Corpus Christi Heart Project. It was funded by NHLBI, and they were comparing rates of MI, angioplasty, and CABG in Mexican Americans and non-Hispanic whites. They found a disparity suggesting that heart disease was more common in Mexican Americans. And so I started working with them and wrote one of my first papers about stroke as a complication of heart disease in Corpus Christi. And I went down to Corpus Christi, met some incredibly nice people, had some really good food, enjoyed the beach, and I was hooked.
Fair enough. Corpus Christi is a really interesting town. It has a little bit of everything, but still has that small town feeling to it. But again, close to the beach, as you well said. So in general, what made you, you mentioned getting hooked on the on Corpus, but what made you get interested in said population? Because it seems to be that Corpus is an interesting place because most of the Hispanic populace there is non-migrant, I think is the terminology you mentioned throughout Grand Rounds. So again, quite an interesting population, but what specifically garnered your interest from that side?
Yeah, so you know, when you look at what the United States is rapidly becoming, it is becoming a multi-ethnic country with stable populations of non-Hispanic whites, Black Americans, and Hispanic Americans. And so the data suggests that by mid-century, one-third of the U.S. population will be Hispanic Americans, and the overwhelming majority of those individuals will trace their roots to Mexico. And so Corpus is like a microcosm. It's a crystal ball of what the whole United States is about to look like. And so it's the perfect place to investigate health equity issues. The other aspects of it is that there's really good medical care in the community. So that's something that's important to evaluate as well. And when you do public health epidemiology work, having a population that is not going to travel back and forth across the border is also important. So this is a stable population of US citizens who are Mexican American in origin. And for all those reasons, it was a really important population to study. And certainly over the years, our grant and paper reviewers have agreed.
Understood. So taking that into consideration, you mentioned one of the big things was having the populace be stable, meaning not necessarily, I guess the correct term is crossing back and forth from the border. And me being from a border town, my question would be, what's the big difference that you think, or if there is a difference, better yet said, between, say, border towns with which the populace certainly crosses back and forth, and it's a way of life, comparing that populace with the people in Corpus, right? Migrant versus non-migrant, I guess.
So immigrant health is a critically important issue in the United States right now. And, you know, I can't say enough of how critical that is. That's not what we do, but I'm really happy that other people are doing it and more people should do that. You know, people who are immigrants are difficult to study because in many aspects, since they are not documented, it's hard to follow them, to locate them. They have a tendency to move around within the United States and may cross back and forth across the border, particularly when they become sick. They may go home to receive care from loved ones on the Mexican side, and it's impossible for us then to follow them there. So our work is looking at a different population, which makes the data more complete. But also, we are very cautious to say that we cannot generalize our results to an immigrant population, and again, suggest how important it is to study that immigrant population.
And that's a very interesting point you bring up. He says, as you all know, and a lot of our listeners will know, a lot of the intracranial athero studies have been in the Asian populace. Do you think, and we try to generalize the results to our population, but do you think we might get something from your cohort regarding these non-migrant groups or this non-migrant populace, where we might be able to say, you know what, probably dual antiplatelets won't be the best choice for our patients, or blood pressure control shouldn't be as stringent for this kind of populace? Or do you think anything of that nature might pop up from your studies?
Well, we've never really approached those very specific clinical issues. As you know, there have been studies over the years looking at whether specific race-ethnic differences are more or less amenable to specific treatments. Many of those studies have now been kind of debunked and you know, kind of thought of as not done properly and kind of more suggestive of saying things that are inappropriate. So I think we have to be very careful about how we would proceed in that way. The other thing is that when we talk about ethnicity, the question is whether you're defining that on a genetic basis, a cultural basis, or what. It may be that some of the reason why we see the disparities in incidence and recurrence going away is because the populations have just been in the United States a very long time. There's a lot of genetic admixture, and because a lot of the cultural aspects are now migrating together, merging together, so that diet, exercise, healthcare access are similar among the populations. So I don't know if we'll ever be in a position to, you know, have a specific recommendations as you're suggesting with respect to stroke. You know, you're also asking for something that may be better handled through personalized medicine, right? Where individuals' genetic profiles combined with their social determinants of health may, you know, kind of yield specific treatment algorithms that can be individualized. That might be better than making more sweeping generalizations based on ethnicity.
Yes, that's a very interesting point, because all our faculty have obviously always stressed that clinical trials are there for a reason, but our patient isn't a number. I mean, they're a person themselves, and we need to take into consideration all of their issues, not only their medical issues. As we well know, medications are, a lot of the medications we use are also expensive. So I second your point about individualizing a lot of the important aspects of the of management.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I teach one of the classes I teach here is essentially about evidence-based medicine. So I believe very strongly in evidence-based medicine. I don't think we should deviate from it based on hunches or theories. You're right, we may need to deviate it based on shared decision making and affordability and other things. You know, where we have evidence, we should be applying it.
Absolutely. And very important, from all your experience and all your previous work, you developed the basic study with help of all your team, the brain attack surveillance in Corpus Christi study, that is. And one of the main impressions that I got is that this study does have a lot of different components to it, because you mentioned a very important cognitive component to it. So seemingly a big, like a big umbrella study, I guess it's the best description of it.
Yeah, we're very pleased with BASIC. You know, as I mentioned, you know, it was started at UT Houston, and the first cycle happened when I was in Houston, and you know, very happy with how it has spun off other studies with about cognitive disorders, caregiving, sleep, and stroke. It's also been a really fertile study for training. Number of graduate students, people who've gotten their master's and PhD work, we've trained medical students and residents and fellows and junior faculty. So I think it's been good for a number of groups, and pretty proud of how it's done.
Yes, and we noticed all your effort, and we do thank you for sharing all this information with us. And then going back a little bit to your basic study, what do you hope to gain from this? You've mentioned trying to elucidate a lot of the issues that are present within the community in Corpus Christi, but how do you think this would modify or affect the way we deliver care?
Well, I think that we have to strive in this country for health equity, right? We are the only high-income country in the world that doesn't have universal health care. And so we have a system where the people that have the most money get the best health care. It's clearly been described that persons of color get their health care in different places than non-Hispanic whites. Non-Hispanic whites go to facilities that are more highly resourced and have better equipment, more likely to have board certified physicians than the facilities that persons of color go to. And so when we exist in that system, if we are not going to remedy it, it should be incumbent upon us to find out whether we are equitably caring for all people in the United States. And I think BASIC has shown over the years that the answer to that strongly is no. Even for people who have been in the United States for over 50 years and are US citizens. So, you know, I think that that's really been the predominant strength of BASIC. We've been able to monitor trends. We've looked at all sorts of different disease states and outcomes. We've looked at patients and caregivers. And now, as we move to the next years of this study, we're very interested in resilience, that is, within the Mexican-American community. What are the factors that make some people have good outcome from stroke and those that have more severe outcome? What can we learn from those different outcomes that could help not only Mexican-Americans, but potentially all race ethnic groups?
Absolutely. And the next thing that I would like you to share with us is what's your experience while running this study regarding post-stroke outcomes with a lot of these non-migrant groups, specifically in Corpus Christi? Do they usually do a little bit better, do a little bit worse, about the same? Or what's the overall outcome that you've seen?
Yeah, so the first thing I want to say is that, as I mentioned in my talk, we have found that the Mexican Americans are much more receptive and agreeable to participate in our studies than the non-Hispanic whites. And we're very proud of that. We don't, we treat everybody with respect. We treat everybody with respect, and we don't do a lot to recruit specific populations. So we treat everybody equally, and still we have a greater representation among Mexican Americans than the non-Hispanic whites. And so there's been a lot written about how persons of color are distrustful of the research system and won't participate in research. We have not found that. And I think that that's very encouraging and suggests that we should be, we should reach out to persons of color to participate in research much more often. In terms of the outcomes, we have found that Mexican Americans do worse from stroke. So stroke types, that is intracerebral hemorrhage versus ischemic stroke, are very similar. Ischemic stroke subtypes are very similar. Initial stroke severity is very similar between the two groups, but something happens between the time that they had their stroke and the 90-day outcome that makes Mexican Americans have worse neurologic, cognitive, and functional outcome and worse quality of life compared to non-Hispanic whites. And that has persisted. Whereas the incidence differences have gone away, the recurrence differences have gone away, the mortality differences have gone away, the outcome in survivors has continued to be persistently worse in Mexican Americans.
Well, then we appreciate you taking the lead on trying to elucidate a lot of these issues that are facing our patients. As we well know, the biggest component of post-stroke care is not only medication, secondary stroke prevention, but doing physical therapy and making changes into the patient's everyday life. That being said, have you looked into the nutritional, the diet aspect of this group? Meaning, I know Mexican American food or Mexican food at least is very, very heavy on tortillas, things of that nature. And sometimes they might not be the best thing for our patients, but have you looked into possibly a dietetics consult or something of that nature?
You know, we've never really looked at nutrition specifically. I've heard the comment that you just made many times. I'm not entirely sure that the non-Hispanic white diet is any better. As you know, lipids, which is predominantly what we're talking about with diet, is a pretty potent risk factor for heart disease, but less potent a risk factor for stroke. Hypertension is much, you know, much stronger risk factor. So we've never really been motivated to look at dietary factors. In the SHARE study, which was the partnership that we had with the Diocese of Corpus Christi, we did work on diet modification to reduce sodium in the diet to help blood pressure, and also to increase fruit and whole grain, fruit and vegetable and whole grain consumption. which has been shown to be helpful for stroke prevention. So that is some of the work that we've done in the community, but I'm not entirely sure about how big an actor diet is in stroke prevention.
Very, very interesting. And one of the interesting things that you just mentioned is approaching the diocese. Can you tell us a little bit about how that went about?
Yeah, well, we've done, you know, we're a hybrid group. We've done work with Diocese of Corpus Christi because we were interested in a church-based intervention. Since most Mexican Americans are Catholic, we thought that was a good place to start. Worked very well. We did this intervention where we randomized churches to intervention versus control. And we looked at trying to increase physical activity, try to increase fruit and vegetable intake, and try to decrease sodium. And we were significantly able to increase fruit and vegetable intake and decrease sodium. We were not successful in increasing physical activity in the intervention, but it was a very good study. We've also partnered with CCISD to do the KIDS trial, where we did a stroke prevention message, where we taught middle school children about stroke and through homework assignments, their parents and guardians, to try to get them to recognize stroke and call 911 immediately. That was also a successful project that measured behavioral intent and stroke knowledge among the students. So, you know, we've kind of done both the epidemiology and the health behavior, health education work in Nueces County.
Wonderful, that's great. Thank you so much for taking the lead on that. Before we let you go, because I'm sure you're a very busy person, is there one main takeaway or one point that you would like to get across to our listeners?
Well, you know, I think that everybody can work on health equity no matter what your job or what your role is, right? We do something at our hospital here where we always monitor differences in wait time for clinic appointments, you know, receiving TPA and mechanical thrombectomy, other measures of quality, like Joint Commission quality measures. We look at them by race, ethnicity, to make sure that we are not providing any biased care. So I think you can, you know, if you're a clinician, you can look at that. If you're an educator, you can talk about this with your students. I think all of us should be talking about health equity all the time so that people are aware of these issues. And obviously, we've talked about a number of different research opportunities for people who are motivated to do that.
Wonderful. So thank you so much, Dr. Morgenstern, for taking your time to talk with us. We really appreciate all the teaching you did and all your comments.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And that concludes this episode of Stroke Busters. Thank you once again for joining us. We want to remind you, ideas and opinions expressed on this show are our own and are not a substitute for expert medical advice. Always contact your doctor before starting any program or therapy to make sure you're getting the best care tailored to your unique situation. Remember, ET Health Stroke is on social media. This is where you're going to find all the information coming out of the Stroke Institute at UT Health Houston. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook at UT Health Stroke. Stay updated on upcoming episodes, share with colleagues, friends and family, and let us know what kind of episodes you would like to hear. Until next time, take care.